You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 134 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm delighted to welcome back, after I think it's about a year and a half or so, Mega. Welcome back.
Well, thanks, Tom. It's been great to catch up again after such a long time, but also doesn't feel as long.
Yeah. It's because it's been quite a while, because you came on. I think it was a matter, I know we were talking about this a little bit off air, but a matter of weeks after giving birth, you messaged me to say, can I come and do a podcast? I was like, yeah, sure, if you want.
I think like at that point, it was just wanting to have a bit of an outlet and just feel connected to sort of that new world that we had entered at that point. So it was really helpful. And it was also helpful that, you know, given that I'm in Australia and most of my family and friends are in the UK, for them to even just have an understanding and idea of what was going on, because naturally when that had, like, we had received Anya's diagnosis, having to explain yourself to friends and family, like, became quite exhausting after some point. So it was just helpful just to be able to kind of have that. And I was like, hey, guys, go and have a listen to this and you'll just sort of know what's happening and going on. So I think that really did help with that too.
Yeah. So I we're going to sort of pick up the journey, I guess, from there, because it was January 2025. I'm recording this now in June 2026. So yeah, best part of 18 months has flown by. And the good news, I guess, from the last time we saw you, you are now out of hospital and have been for quite some time, which is good. I guess that must have been quite a huge relief to go in the end.
Yes, it was a much longer than expected hospital stay, given that we thought we were only going to be there for a couple of weeks. And, you know, they had initially suspected that Anya had the short segment, but she didn't have short segment. She ended up having, you know, like tuberculotic plus. So they needed to keep her in hospital for longer because we had to adjust to life with the stoma and getting the stoma output under control. And then she was also on the TPN. So the plan during then was just to wean her off the TPN and introduce the feeds again and getting the stoma output under control. But during that, there were so many ups and downs, and they told us that it wasn't going to be sort of linear progress. There was going to be some good days and some bad days where, you know, if the stoma output went slightly higher, then it would set us back a couple of days. And so there was a lot of like back and forth and tweaking, a lot of, you know, emotional challenges as well in terms of just trying to get my head around what was happening or what was going on, understanding this, you know, health condition that we had never heard of. Also, like, I had no idea what things like TPN was. I had no idea what, you know, like, I heard of like stomas and stuff, but I never had to have it as my reality and, you know, do bag changes and learn about different products and working out what was best for her. So when that was all under control, we finally got to go home. I think it was sort of nearly around like 78 days that we had sort of been there. It was very daunting to Leo initially because, you know, you always had that comfort and support whilst being in the hospital. As you know, hard as it was being there, of just knowing that, okay, you can just call a nurse and, you know, you have the doctors coming around and seeing you every day. So it was initially very daunting going home, because I remember even doing like the first bag change at home. And I was like close to tears because I was like, how am I going to do this? And then I think by the end of it, when we sort of, you know, got to Anya's second surgery, which, you know, was nearly when she was about 11 months old. So we left hospital when she was about 3 months, and we had her sort of pull through and reversal at 11 months. I was like, I'm like an expert and a pro at doing like pay changes now. So we had like a whole sort of table set up with all of her supplies, and we had like a whole routine of, you know, like giving her a shower before, like giving her a shower before, having everything cut and ready and placed out. And it was just like, I would be doing things and my husband would be passing me the pieces, and we just sort of like kind of had like a rhythm of how we were doing her bag changes. There were a lot of challenging bag changes as well, because naturally with a crying baby, it's not easy. And it was really hard, like, you know, seeing them, and sometimes, you know, managing the skin around stoma as well. Anya's stoma was quite prolapsed as well. So as she would get more upset, it would prolapse even more, and then it would go back in because she had the loop ileostomy. So managing that whilst doing a bag change, it was, it was very, very overwhelming.
Definitely, definitely. And I guess with prolapsed stomas as well, they're a tough one. There are plenty of people who've told me the sugar trick, where you put sugar on. I don't know if that, well, that was told to you as well.
I never got around to doing that because I just was told that this is how her stoma was going to be, given that it's the loop ileostomy. And the surgeons at the hospital even said that they could potentially like revise it a little bit. But they're like, there's no guarantee that it won't come back out again. So I just said, look, we just have to accept it and get on with it. But you know, I've seen some people's stomas where it's just like, you know, the round piece, like sort of just sitting on the tummy, and you can cut your bags out to shape it, and you just know that it's going to always go on. Whereas with Anya's, it just always changed shape. So we couldn't even prepare that much. So we had to always just, I had to just eyeball how it was looking at that point and hope for the best. Again, you know, learn a lot of tips and tricks of like different products to use to sort of help it from like not leaking. And then I got to a point where like with bags that I could keep it on for like a couple of days if I got it on really well. So yeah, it became kind of like a fine art in the end, and I was surprisingly good at it.
I guess it's one of those things you just like we were talking a little bit before about how all Hirschsprung's people are different and how all different journeys are different. I guess the way stomas react are also different as well, and I guess you have to just learn as you go, and then sort of as time goes on, you think, oh well, okay, if it looks like this, then I'll do this, or whatever it might be. And I guess that is the, I guess, frustrating sometimes thing with Hirschsprung's, where there isn't necessarily a manual that you follow all the time, and you go, well, you know,
yeah, work it out as you go on your journey, please.
Exactly. It's not always 1 + 1 = 2. Sometimes it might equal, you know, 9 and make absolutely no sense. So it's...
Well, the nice thing is 1 + 1 = 2. We learned over time that her stoma would be smaller in the morning. So we would always do like a bag change early in the morning. So before my husband would go to work, we would say we'll do the bag change then, because... Like, if there were ever times when I'd be home by myself, I was like, what am I going to do if her bag leaks? Because one person would have to, like, hold the phone and put some TV on for her to keep her distracted whilst doing it. So it was, like, a two-man job. And then, yeah, like, we had, like, a good routine in place. And I think that really helped just make that stoma journey a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think those two people definitely better than one in that, especially you have the wriggly baby.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach. Here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
But yeah, so obviously leaving the hospital, then having to do bag changes and whatnot by yourselves and managing to get on with that, which is fantastic. How has sort of life changed since leaving the hospital?
It was definitely, you know, like I said, initially feeling daunting, like just not having that extra support around you. Because, you know, if there was anything that you slightly, like, for example, if there's anything that I was ever concerned about, and like, say I was in the hospital and going and getting a coffee, like, you know, the team at the hospital, incredible, like the nurses, the doctors, surgeons, everyone, like you kind of just become like friends at that point. So like, I remember one day I was like worried about the color of Anya's stoma, and I saw her surgeon just walking in the corridor, and I was like, hey, you know, I'm just little. And he was like, okay, I'll come and have a look right now. And he literally just came in at that point and had a look. And then he was just like, I know you're going to be worried if I don't, like, you know, tell you that it's okay. So he just came in, had a look, and he's like, everything's fine, you're all good. And I was able to be like, okay, I can relax now. So, you know, you go from like not having that to then going home and just questioning everything and be like, is this okay? Is this not? And then we had to start over time to realize what Anya's normal was. So, you know, is it normal for her to do this? And is it not normal for her to do that? And just make that assessment, which I think over time, like, we've gotten quite good at. Initially, there was one or two incidents where there were, like, things, you know, that I wasn't sure about. And I just thought the best thing would be just to take her into the hospital, which I did. So about, like, a few times, I would just take her in just to get that reassurance. But over time, I've just kind of learned what is normal for her, and you know, just over time, just with experience, you just get to know that, right?
Yeah, definitely. And it is, and I know I've mentioned this term before, but it's trial and error sometimes. And you're just kind of going, okay, well, we did this before. Well, it is trial and error, but there are times where you'll do the same thing twice, and sometimes it will work and sometimes it won't work. So it is trial and error, sort of, kind of, especially with Total Colonic Plus, that, yeah, it can be wildly, wildly different. And with the Plus as well, I mean, doing some research on it a few weeks ago, the Plus can mean so many different things for people. What will you ever explain what the Plus meant for Anya?
So we were told that most of the time with total colonic, there is some kind of small bowel involvement, which is what takes you then into the Plus category, basically. And it could be varying lengths of small bowel. It could be a little bit, it could be a lot, okay bit, and then it could be extensive. So for Anya, we were told that she still had enough small bowel that she wouldn't need sort of any like long-term kind of like TPN support. She was on the TPN whilst we were in hospital, but had, like, you know, she lost more bowel or it was more extensive, then she probably would have needed some TPN support going with that as well. So for her, like, given sort of it's just the last part of her small bowel, we were just told that for her it will just mean that we just need to monitor, like, her absorption of certain, like, vitamins and minerals, mostly B12. So that's something that we for now have to just monitor every 6 months just to make sure that her vitamin B12 levels are adequate. And just absorption of a few other things like iron and vitamin D and those things. That's just what we were told, that like if you have like a shorter amount of small bowel, that you might just need some kind of like supplementation with.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess getting nutrients in when you have less bowel. I mean, the same with things like dehydration, I guess, as well. Trying to, because we absorb, well, everyone with Hirschsprung's will have to be aware of that, because we have basically we have less bowel, we have less absorption. So
yeah,
I'm guessing that becomes tricky as well.
Yeah, and then yes, of course, naturally the dehydration thing is quite a key one as well. We only had like our first sort of real dehydration episode just a couple of weeks ago, actually. So Anya caught a gastro bug, and she just, I think like her catching any kind of gastro bug was like my biggest fear. And, you know, she's caught a few other things, but has managed them okay. But with the gastro, it was just like, there was just not anything we could really do at home to kind of keep her adequately hydrated. And which resulted in us having to take her into the hospital and get her rehydrated. But naturally with the Hirschsprung's, it's not just a straightforward thing of like, okay, I'm dehydrated, just rehydrate me and I can go home. There's a lot more workup that they need to do just to make sure and rule out that it's not like enterocolitis or anything like an obstruction in the bowel. So all of those things need to be worked up and like crossed off before you can essentially go home. Yeah, that was like our first sort of like big incident post her leaving hospital the first time round. And also she had the pull through as well. So that was quite another big hospital visit for us. But all very interesting experiences.
Yes. Yeah. You said the pull through was done at 11 months, which I think is sort of roughly normal time, isn't it?
We had like, you know, after being discharged initially, we had like a few appointments with Anya's surgeon. I think the key thing was just growth, just making sure that she was growing. We were always told that she will grow like a little bit sort of less compared to her peers. Like she won't be like rapidly gaining weight and things, which, you know, she's surprisingly done well in the sense that when she initially was in hospital, she went off the growth charts to now sort of being back on the growth charts and being at a good level on the growth charts. We just had to kind of keep going. And then the decision was made that she was ready for it with her weight and development was going well. So yeah, we went for it at 11 months. And then we kind of, you know, we have a really nice relationship with Anya's surgeon. Like he's, you know, he's amazing. And I just requested to him saying that could we please just do it before her first birthday so that we can actually like spend the month like of her birthday not in hospital, because I was like, I just didn't want to be back there again at that point. So it was nice that we did it before her first birthday, and then we were home in time for that and we were able to sort of like actually celebrate and not be in hospital environment.
Good. Yeah. You don't want to be in hospital for your birthday if you can help it at all. You can help it at all. No, and the pull through surgery itself was successful?
Yes. So they did her pull through and her reversal in one surgery. I know in some cases they do it in two stages where they do the pull through and then the reversal later, but we heard they did it all in one. And we had about a week in the hospital where you know, all about the recovery and like getting the bowels to wake up after going through so much. It was a very long day from when we had like dropped her into seeing her once she had come out of theater. We just didn't know which way it was going to go because there were so many different kind of variables that we were told that, like, you know, she could still come out with the stoma. we might find something in there that we didn't expect. And what I had kind of like meant to prepare myself was like just to be prepared for anything, which is the thing that I didn't do the first time round. The first time round when they took her in, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, she's going to go in for surgery, come out, and we're going to go home in a week or something. But she came out and there were so many different things that had gone down in surgery at that point. So it was just trying to keep that open mind. So I just remember that day of like just literally walking around the hospital and just waiting. And then there's like a telephone, which is outside of the recovery ward that parents can just like kind of call and just see like, oh, is my child out yet? And I remember like we just kept going up there and being like, is she out yet? Is she out yet? Like, you know, what's her and then just watching the phone, just waiting for that phone call. And yeah, like I just remember getting that phone call and they, you know, they told us that, you know, she's out and she did really well. And then the first thing we asked was just, you know, did, you know, everything go as they had planned to? And they said yes. And then they said that like they were able to do the reversal, they were able to do the pull through. And I just remember like bursting into tears because it was just such a like, you know, it was just so much emotion like coming through. And you know, we would have accepted whatever would be the best thing for her. And we did say that we had that conversation with the surgeon. We just said, look, if we feel that, you know, even her keeping the stoma will be the right thing for her, then we will fully support that. Like we're not, we will go with whatever you recommend. And he said that no, he felt that doing the reversal was the right thing. So we accepted that. And then, yeah, just going in and seeing her as well, like after that many hours being away from her was like, it was just such a mixture of emotions again of like, you know, just the emotion of like what my baby has been through as to sort of happiness that like it's done. But then you also have to then remind yourself like, okay, we still have a journey to go on after this as well. It's not just like you had surgery and then off you go and everything is great, which is like a big misconception. Because a lot of people have, you know, like said to me, they're like, oh, but she's had surgery now and everything. And I'm just like, I still have to be very vigilant. I still have to keep on top of things. Like I still have to monitor her in ways that I say wouldn't monitor like my son, for example, who doesn't have Hirschsprung's. So I was like, yes, that's that one part. But now it's like, now the real journey starts because it's just like, what does this now mean like for us going forward? Because again, there's so many ways that the surgery can go afterwards as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think you're absolutely right there with the misconception. I saw something the other day about Hirschsprung's and it said, well, once you have surgery, the Hirschsprung's can be fixed with surgery. And you think, well, yes and no. Like it's not. Yeah, okay. The initial issues, you know, potentially, obviously taking the bad bit of bowel out and sticking two together. But that I wouldn't class that, and I don't think many people, whether you're a parent of someone with Hirschsprung's or whether you have it yourself, would class that as fixed, quote unquote. So it's you're absolutely right when you say that it's a managed condition, I guess, rather than a right, well, we've fixed you now, off you go. But I think you're absolutely right with that. I guess also when you're one of the trickiest things, I guess, for parents is waiting, the waiting through surgery. I mean, I was lucky enough that I was asleep all through my surgery, so I was fine. but
the family, like it's the most agonizing, like it's so slow, the day, like it's like just ridiculously slow. And then, yeah, like every minute, like just watching like the time on your phone change. And yeah, like I just remember just kind of like circling around like the operating suite, just hoping to get like some kind of, even though I know I couldn't see her, but just somehow hoping that maybe they might walk past with her or something. I don't know. Like my mind was just kind of all over the place, just wanting to see it, just wanting to know like what was happening. And yeah, it was a tough day. Like it was, you know, that morning as well, they give you the call the day before to say, okay, this is the time that you need to come in and everything. And then we went in for like pre-op appointments, and they have a discussion with you, because when she went in for her first surgery, because she was so small, we weren't allowed to go in with her. But this time, because they said that, you know, she's older, they can get quite distressed if the baby can be quite distressed if they don't see their parents. So they said one parent can go in whilst they put her to sleep. And I was like, I can't do it. I was like, I can't see that happening. Like, it will just break me down completely. So my husband is the one that went in with her and watched her like be put to sleep. And then I was like, yeah, it was just something that, like, he's a lot more stronger than me. So he was able to handle it well. Whereas I was still crying outside while it was going on. And then they said to us, okay, it could be about like 6 to 7 hours. It ended up being a little bit longer. So then you just start thinking, oh my God, what's happening? What's going on? Why is it taking so long? Yeah, it's...
You kind of feel sometimes as though it might be handy if they didn't give you a time, because it every time, I imagine if they say it's, well, like they said, between 6 and 7 hours, as soon as it's 7 hours and 1 minute, I imagine you start worrying.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And that, naturally.
Yeah. And then you think, well, what's wrong? Or, you know, because we're human, we automatically think, well, something must have gone wrong now that it's 7 hours and, you know, over 7 hours. Exactly. But yeah, so sometimes, you know, I hope they don't give a time, because it's...
I know, just give sort of like a rough ballpark of like, you know, it's an all day thing. But I'm the type of person that even like with Anya's surgery, whenever he was, I would really just keep asking questions. And like, I it's just that I want to know everything. I want to know like every single detail and everything. And I think like even at some points he was like, it's okay. Like, you know, we'll think about that later. And I was like, no, I need to know now. Like, I want to know. It's a day that like you just can't explain. Like I will remember that day so clearly, I think, for the rest of my life now. And then, you know, it's like happiness seeing them come out, but then also just emotional to see them in sort of pain as well. Which is even harder to see them go through what they're going through. And, you know, I just remember her being so like just out of it. She was just like not smiling, just so miserable. And like, she's such a happy child. You know, and by 11 months, like it was very different to sort of her being 2 weeks old and her being 11 months old, because at 2 weeks old, she was just, you know, like a blob basically. Whereas at 11 months old, she's like her whole individual person with her own personality. And it was really hard seeing her not for a few days be her like normal bubbly, but also amazing that how like a week later she was kind of back to her normal self. Like sort of as soon as we were in the hospital that time for 6 nights, and then like sort of a week later, she's back to laughing and smiling again. And then you're just like, oh, okay, did that all just happen in this last week? It feels so surreal. But yeah, kids are just so resilient. Like it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's, I think because we go through a lot of surgery or generally go through a lot of surgery very young, I think our pain threshold also is possibly a lot higher. Because and especially with the type of surgery it is as well, with being stomach surgery, generally it's pretty invasive. And yes, but that's great that sort of a matter of sort of like a week later or so that things were almost back to normal. Or
yeah, like she was our new normal, because then it was like adjusting to life without the stroma, which was really weird for us because I just wasn't used to it. Like the stroma became our normal, and then you know, everyone speaks about that like dreaded nappy rash like post fall through, which touch wood we didn't experience, because we just I was just like constantly like I don't think I slept, because I was just like constantly trying to hear out or listen to see or even just to smell if she had done a poo while she was sleeping. And I remember this first like couple of like weeks, especially where I'd wake up in the morning and it was just like the room was just filled with like nappy bags because of like how many changes I did in the night. And then just trying different creams. Like I remember reading just all those like, you know, Facebook posts and Instagram like posts of like other heard from parents talking about what they use or what they didn't. And it's like just trial and error again of finding like what worked for us. And luckily we found some creams that worked really well, and we used those, and we managed to sort of get away with like the real extreme stories that I was initially preparing myself to go through.
That's really good. Really, really good. And that's where social media, I guess, can be really helpful, where you get, especially there are quite a few Facebook groups and quite a few large Facebook groups.
Yeah.
And it can work both ways. You can have, because generally people don't post, you know, everything's normal or nothing's really happening. You know, it's all going to be one extreme or the other. So it's either going to be everything's terrible, I need loads and loads of help, or actually, you know, everything's gone really, really well, or whatever. So I guess you don't really get those stories in the middle where it's just, you know, things like, are
like, we have the bad days, and, you know, we've gone through, like, you know, there's so much to it as well. Like there's been some days which have been great, some days which have been really tough, and, you know, just because we may not have had an issue in that, it doesn't mean that we've not had issues in other areas. And that's what I think you have to just remember, that there's so much to this journey, that it's not just a straightforward one. And again, how it just varies for everyone. Like, you know, there's people who have the same level of Hirschsprungs but have completely different outcomes and experiences. And then, yeah, it's a very weird one. Like, no one can tell you that this is your outcome and this is how it's going to be.
No, and you're absolutely right. I think I said it earlier on, you know, 134 episodes in now, and I haven't found two that are the same. So everybody, because yes, the condition may have the same name, or you may have, you know, there being six different types, you might have the same type as someone else, but you could live a completely different life, you know. And there will be, and I want to stress this point as well to people, that even though a lot of people come on here because a lot of things have happened, there have been plenty of people I've spoken to, and probably you've spoken to as well, where not a lot has happened, where it just kind of, Yeah, and I've had people on before who they'll message me and they'll go, oh, my child has Hirschsprung's, and you know, we've had the pull through and things are going all right, but obviously they don't want to come on the podcast because it would be a 5-minute podcast, and they go, well, we had the pull through and now everything's all right, and there are a lot of stories out there like that as well. So I guess it's not. Yeah, like you say, everybody is completely different. But there are a lot of positives out there. There are an awful lot of positives out there.
Oh, definitely. I like to remind myself of that when, like, you know, there are still some days where I still, you know, like when we had our recent gastro stint in the hospital, where I was just like, why is this happening? You know, like, what is going on? Like, how is this happening? And it takes you back to that kind of like mental space of like questioning everything. But then you have to also just remind yourself again of like that there is good outcomes as well. Like, it's not always just doom and gloom. And, you know, there are some instances where like families are like, you know, having like real big challenges and everything, and like you read those posts as well, and your heart does go out to them because you're just like, you know, this is tough. And you know, just because maybe something might be good now doesn't mean that it's always going to be like that, and just because something bad is happening now doesn't mean that it's always going to be like that as well. Like, it's just, yeah,
I mean, it's one of those things where if someone could tell you, you know, 5 years down the line, this is going to happen. 10 years down the line, this is going to happen. Would be really, really helpful. But it's at the moment, and I'm not saying that will ever happen, and it won't ever happen. But at the moment, it's a difficult one to do. But I'm hoping as more research is put on, because I think there's more research now than certainly I've ever known before. I mean, in America, over here in the UK, There's an awful lot of Hirschsprung's research going on, and people also not just doing research into babies that have Hirschsprung's, but actually, you know, what is life like when you get to teens? What is life like when you get to 20s, 30s, you know, whatever? And just giving people a flavor of, you know, what might happen in the future with a variety of Hirschsprung's. So not just looking at short segment people or long segment or total colloid, but just going through a variety of different Hirschsprung's and giving people a bit of a flavor as to what might happen, which I guess can be useful.
I think, like, as parents, when you hear, okay, your child has this, that's what you want to know, right? You want to know what's their future going to be like, and not just immediate future, because I have seen that there obviously is that more focus on children. But I have often wondered what happens when Anya is like 18 plus, like if she needs support, where will she go? I've even like spent time like Googling, you know, like adult colorectal surgeons who know about Hirschsprung. And I had to go for an appointment with a colorectal surgeon just about my gallbladder. And the first thing I asked him, I was just like, have you ever seen any adults with Hirschsprung's? And he was just like, yeah, just in my whole career, one person. And I was like, wow. I was more curious to know about that than to know about my gallbladder, because I was just like, I just want to know. I want all the information possible, but it's very limited when it comes to adults.
It is. And I think it's definitely something I want to do on this podcast as well, is to try and find more adults, whether they're my age or, you know, a bit younger, a bit older, try and find more adults and interview more adults and who fab the condition and see what they're doing, really, because but there are lots of success stories out there. There are lots of people who are, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of jobs I've had with people on here, you know, with people who are, you know, doing nail technician or fitness instructors or mainly actors. Everyone seems to be an actor with Hirschsprung. So if Anya's thinking of a career in acting, there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah, I think she'd be pretty good, actually. She's I could definitely see her being in that industry for sure, because
she's a lot of people to follow.
Yes, a lot of inspiration actually around her. So that's why one thing that I'm very lucky for her, like to grow up to be able to see that and being able to sort of have access to those stories. And I've even just like made like, you know, her friend here in Australia as well. And also like in London, another mom that I speak to whose daughters are like, they're all like around the same age. So I was like, it's so nice for Anya to also have that as she grows up, to have like friends sort of even here. And, you know, we consider UK home as well, that she can always like sort of keep in touch with and, you know, go through that journey with. So she's so lucky that she'll have that network as she grows up.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she's also like isolated.
Yes, definitely. That's so, so important, because it can be sometimes a bit, you know, especially like you said right at the beginning, when you have to explain to people all the time, and or, you know, certain things happen in life and you go, well, yeah, that's because I have Hirschsprungs. And they say, well, what's Hirschsprungs? And you have to explain it. And it goes, you know, on and on and on and on. But to have a group of friends, especially younger, who, you know, maybe don't ask those questions yet, but even when they do ask those questions, be hopefully just sort of accepting and go, all right, you know, this happens because to go Hirschsprung.
Yep.
You know, that's really, really valuable, I guess.
So lucky to, you know, with the power of the internet and social media and everything, that there is that access there. So yeah, like it's definitely exciting, and you know, I am very excited for her future and as she gets bigger. And you know, like she's, you know, luckily she's, you know, a very special child. She's, you know, developmentally, she's, you know, having like, she's doing well. She's she goes to daycare as well now, so like she has a great time there, and seeing like her little personality come out. And sometimes it's only like sort of when I change her nappy and I see like her scars on her tummy that like, it reminds me of what she's gone through. Like I don't feel that this condition defines her as a person at all. And you know, I wish I could go back and tell myself that back then as well, that this is not going to define her as a person. Like, you know, she's still going to go on to do all the great things in life and have a great, fulfilling life. And this is not something that's going to hold her, and this is not something that's going to hold her back. Whereas initially, I just, like, all the things that came into my mind, like, I was like, is she going to be able to do this? Is she going to be able to do that? And, like, my mind was going sort of all over the place. So I'd love to go back and tell the old me, you know, back in December 2024, that it's going to be okay.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. There will be parents listening to this in the same situation that you were in, you know, who've just had a child diagnosed with Hirschsprungs early on, and you know, first thing that people do is Google it, and hopefully this podcast will come up, and then, you know, they can listen and hear that actually, you know, 18 months down the line, you know, things have really improved, and you know, the fog has lifted, so to speak, and that actually a lot of those worries that you had at the beginning, is this going to happen, is that going to happen, are they going to be able to do this, that, the other, have sort of been, yeah, fears unfounded, which is so good, so good to hear.
Yeah, like I even remember this was whilst Anya was still like admitted in NICU at that point, and we had just gone out to get some dinner, and I remember my sisters were with me at that time, and we were just having dinner, and I just started crying when we were in the restaurant, because I was like, is Anya going to be able to come out and eat in a restaurant with us? Because I just didn't understand like what this condition meant for her and everything. And like I just remember breaking down, and I was like, you know, simple things like that. I even questioned that, like, will we be able to do that? And now she's like, you know, she's like a proper foodie. And, you know, like she will be eating something, and then she wants to eat while we're eating. And like generally, like she pretty much has everything that we would be eating as well. So she's not limited in her diet. She has like a few allergies to like egg and like coconut, surprisingly, so those types of things we have to avoid with her. But generally, like she wants to eat everything and anything, which is you know, is so beautiful to see, because whenever she's like, she wants something, I was like, oh my God, hey, let me quickly go get it ready for you. Hey, have it. Like, you know, eat. So it's just such a nice thing to see. And yeah, like, I just wish again, like, that I could go back and tell the crying me in a restaurant that it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is so, so good to hear. But it has, it's been brilliant to see you again. Because I know you've been a huge, I think, apart from my parents, you're probably the biggest supporter of the podcast and liking things and following people and this, that, the other. So it has been great to have you back on again. And obviously, whenever you want to come back on and give an update, then I'm sure everyone would love to hear you again.
I'm sure there'll be more of me. Don't worry. Like, this world has become like a true passion of mine. Like, I love seeing and hearing the stories, and I really enjoyed connecting with so many parents through your like podcast, different parents that I've connected with and stuff, and it's been amazing. Like, you know, all over the world, I have like, you know, friends all over the world now, I would say, like, and it's been amazing, and I really hope to sort of, you know, put it out there that like this community is amazing. Everyone is so warm and lovely and so helpful, and we're just so lucky to all have each other in that. And I've said this before as well, that, you know, I'm always there if any family ever would, you know, wants to chat or speak about anything. Like, I'm more than happy to share our experience and even just be like a listening ear, and sometimes that's just all you need as well, rather than someone telling you, okay, it means this and that. Sometimes you just need to have that kind of like then. So yeah, more than happy to help in any way that I can.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so, so much for coming back on again. It's been great, and we will do this. We will do this again another time.
Definitely. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.